The Daily Connect Podcast.
And it is Wednesday, the 24th of October, 2018, and it's time for another Daily Connect Podcast. Good to be here. Coming up, we are going to tell you all about the Marrakesh Treaty. That is the new way that a lot of people now are going to be able to access books across borders. Fantastic news. It's finally been ratified by the European Parliament, meaning it's now law there, and that can really make a big difference to a lot of blind and partially sighted people around the world getting access to books. More on that to come. Also, some great sports events happening here at home. We're going to hear about the British Blind Sports Taster Days that are coming up for kids aged 11 to 16. But we start off with news on the new Social Security Department within the Scottish Parliament. And the reason we're focusing on that is because it's new. It's rather interesting because what's happening is a number of benefits are being devolved from the Westminster Parliament to the Scottish Parliament. And one of those benefits is personal independence payment. Well, the new Social Security Minister, Shirley-Ann Somerville, has been talking to Alan Russell about the new department.
Our new Social Security agency, Social Security Scotland, is only a month old. It's delivering its first payments at the moment, and that's the carer's allowance supplement. But once we've seen the devolution of the benefits to Scotland, we're still only getting 15% of those up to the Scottish Parliament to have control over. And the rest, including very important ones such as universal credit, it will still be reserved to Westminster.
Now, one of the major payments which will be devolved is personal independence payment. Now, that's across the UK at the moment, formerly disability living allowance. Now, there's been a lot of controversy over the years about things like the assessment process, appeals, you know, using PIP for motability support as well. What kind of things have you had to take into consideration then with this particular payment?
I know that DLA and PIP is one of those critical aspects of the system which currently people have absolutely no trust in. They talk about getting caught out by the system, about having to fight the system, which is completely not what we want to have. We want a system where people can trust that they'll be supported during that process. So one of the important aspects is to ensure that we use the information that's already available about an individual rather than a face-to-face assessment. So we want to dramatically reduce the number of face-to-face assessments that are there. Now, if we can't, if the agency can't access all the information required, then there will have to be a face-to-face assessment. But the important aspect is that it won't be delivered by a private sector provider. I'm wanting a system that is a genuine public service, and that means it will be delivered by the Social Security Agency that has no targets on how many people to fail to ensure that that's some sort of idea that they're doing their job correctly. So this will be based on what the individual needs as they're going through that process. Now, of course, there's also a right to a redetermination and a right to an appeal if people want it, but we need to get that right at the start, because the reason there's so many appeals just now under the DWP system, the reason that those appeals are in the large successful is because they didn't make the decision right in the first place. So we need to get that information right. We need to use the face-to-face assessments only when absolutely required, and do so in a way that people feel supported during that process by public service provision.
It is the start of a long journey. It's quite a large undertaking, as you said, Shirley-Ann. In terms of personal independence payment then, do you have an idea when that will come under the control of the Scottish Government and when those payments could be rolled out?
Well, the rollout and will be staged over time, and that's important because we have to ensure that there's a safe and secure transition of the payments. Nothing would make me more satisfied than to actually get this process to work faster, but I need to ensure that there's a safe and secure transition as my top priority. The legislative competence of all the benefits, including DLA PIP, will come to the Scottish Parliament by the end of this parliamentary term. And I appreciate that that means that people will be going through a system which is not supportive and which many people suffer a great deal of stress and anxiety about. And I'm genuinely sorry that we can't speed that process up, but I need to ensure that there's a safe and secure transition, because the last thing that I can do and that the agency can do is do something which will be detrimental to people getting their payments at the right time.
Shirley-Ann Somerville there, speaking about the new Social Security Scotland department.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now, do you fancy taking up some sport? Well, if you're blind or partially sighted and you're aged between 11 and 16, listen up as we hear now from Liana Casio about some rather interesting taster days coming up from the charity British Blind Sport.
It's aimed at 11 to 18-year-olds, and what they do through the process is once they apply and join us, we put them through a couple of development days and get them in touch with opportunities that are based on their needs and wants. So it's completely tailored to each individual. They do as little or as much as they want to get the most out of the programme. In terms of the opportunities that we kind of source, it's based on volunteering. We try to broaden their horizons in terms of what that looks like. Typically, youngsters think that it's just coaching, officiating, but we try and to get them in touch with administration, maybe some social media, blogging, etc., and just to give them broad opportunities to develop those other skills, which, as you said, links to those kind of employability skills for the future. And I think that's one of the strengths of the programme, is that we try to help young people make further connections, not just with organisations, but with other youngsters with sight loss. So it's just making them have, I guess, the support network for them to be more aware of what they can achieve and raise their confidence, and hopefully with that they can inspire other young leaders to get involved in this programme and other social action in their communities. If people want more information on See My Voice, which is funded by Sport England and the I Will Fund, then you can contact myself, Liana, which is Lijana, at britishblindsport.org.uk, or they can call our office, which is 01926 424247. If they're struggling to access it through the website, then we're more than happy to take a phone call and get them to do it there and then with us.
So get in touch by phone, or you can Google British Blind Sport for more details.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now to the big news of the week, and that is that the Marrakesh Treaty has been ratified, meaning better access to books for blind and partially sighted people across the world. Well, it all started off with this announcement.
Finally, as of today, books, magazines and other printed material will be more easily available in accessible formats for all blind and visually impaired persons across the EU, thanks to a mandatory and EU-wide exception to the copyright rules.
So the Marrakesh Treaty is now here and it's now official. But what is it, and how will it change the way we access books around the world? Here's MEP Max Anderson.
It's an international WIPO treaty that removes the legal barriers in copyright law that prevents libraries and organizations for blind and visually impaired people, that keeps them from sending accessible copies of books across borders. Today, when you make a book into a format that blind people can read, by, for example, reading it into a computer, that new copy is most often not permitted to be sent across a national border because of copyright law. And this is a major factor behind the fact that most visually impaired people in the world have very little access to books. Because when you make a copy in one country, you're not allowed to share it with other countries. The Marrakesh Treaty removes those barriers and makes it possible to share books, and thus it will create a vastly improved access to books for blind people all over the world.
Now, while the Marrakesh Treaty has now been signed and is now ratified by the various member countries, that wasn't always the case. It's taken a number of years to get to this point, as we heard from Jude Carton-Darling. She is one of the MEPs in the European Parliament and spoke to us during the process.
I think it's really sad for people who need access to easy reading books for the visually impaired. And the time that it's taking to get this treaty ratified is just extra time that they can't appreciate world's literature and culture, and we're excluding people, not just here, because only 5% of books are available in Europe, but particularly in the developing world, where only 1% of books are available for visually impaired people. I know from my own family's experience that for people like my gran, who has macular degeneration, access to these books is absolutely crucial to feel like you have a connection with the culture and a connection with the outside world and with what's going on. So it's really sad that our governments can't get their act together and get this ratified.
One of the people behind the original idea for the Marrakesh Treaty was MEP Catherine Styler. She explained to us how she got involved in all of this.
I started partly because of the experience of what was happening with people who were visually impaired and blind and their lack of getting books in an accessible format. We formed an open knowledge campaign about e-book access in public libraries because the librarians were telling us that already, not just about accessible formats, but, you know, just having e-books, some publishers were refusing to provide libraries with books in an e-format. Now, what's really interesting is that tablets and e-readers actually revolutionise accessibility for visually impaired and blind people, because you can obviously make texts bigger. You can, you know, and as we know that people, as they're ageing, sight is a real issue. So it's also about older people too. And so there's a whole combination of issues that came to the fore, where we were seeing that many publishers were not providing libraries with books in an e-format. And if we want to protect libraries as a precious public space and ensure that libraries are fit for the 21st century, then we have to make sure that libraries have access to e-books so that we're part of this digital revolution and that we're not left behind. And this was something that we felt very, very important, and that's why we formed the Open Knowledge Campaign, partly in reaction to what was happening with for visually impaired people, but also about the fact that librarians were coming to us to say, look, we have to take action or we're going to lose the argument. And you know, we've got many issues that are coming up in this Parliament on copyright and other issues to do with intellectual property, where we have to get it right so the libraries can access. It's not about accessing books for free, it's about making sure there's a fair system in place that obviously compensates rights holders but also ensures that our precious public spaces are open and accessible, and that knowledge will not be for a privileged few, the knowledge will be open and accessible to all.
So from that simple idea came the Marrakesh Treaty. Incredible. Well, there you go. That is your updates on this week's World Connect.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Finally, time for our lovely, cute and cuddly story of the day. And that usually comes courtesy of our Pause for Thought feature. Today we hear from Karina Gregory and her guide dog's experience.
Hello, everyone. My name's Karina and live near Coventry in the West Midlands. I am currently on my third qualified dog. My first one, unfortunately, was rejected after 5 weeks. It was a very difficult time for both of us, as he was very strong-willed and very determined. It was a very sad day, but a great relief when he went back to guide dogs. I then had to wait 12 months for my second guide dog, who was a female, and she was a golden lab retriever, quite a big girl, and her name was Tanya. Tanya and I worked together for 6.5 years until she really slowed down, to the point that I was getting more and more irritated with her, and it was unfair to keep her working. So, in my mind, the right thing to do was to tentatively suggest retirement. My only concern was, because of the travelling that I do and the need to be able to get around, was that I needed to keep the dog working until a replacement could be found. I was sat at work and the phone rang. Now, for some reason, I couldn't answer it. And one of my colleagues did. And she said, Karina, it's a call from guide dogs. I initially thought, well, they'll just be ringing to catch up from earlier. But no, they were phoning to say that they'd found a potential match after 2.5 hours. I was absolutely stunned. The following day, they brought out a golden lab retriever called Orca, who I'm very proud and pleased to say is now my current dog. Now, there are some similarities between Tanya and Orca, which is fantastic, but also I was quite amazed at the difference between them both. The one thing I learnt with Tanya was that she was always right. And I'm convinced she could read my mind. She was very determined and very wanting to please me. I'll give you an example. One day in Birmingham, she was trying to take me back to the station. I was telling her no, that wasn't the right way. So in the end, she sat down and refused to move. This was after 2 weeks of being together, and essentially my first proper working guide dog. So you can imagine the state of mind I was in. What do I do? Is there a drop in front of us? Why won't she move? A new dog in a strange city that won't move. So what I decided to do was to place the ball back in her court. And I said to her, okay, you find a way. At which point she started taking me back down what I presumed was an entry to a shop. So I stopped and asked somebody, who advised me that the train station was just down on the left-hand side. After that, I concluded that she was always right.
Indeed. Well, thank you for that, Karina. And that is our Daily Connect podcast for today. Back on air tomorrow, 10 till 12 on the usual channel, Freeview 7:30, and online, of course. You can also catch this podcast again from 5 o'clock tomorrow. Thanks for downloading. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow.
The Daily Connect Podcast.